Okay, so I'll be talking about a particular model for flocking, and it's a continuous model. My collaborators are Tom Antonsen, Horvath Guzdar, and Nick Mikulski. Nick, raise your hand. Oh, there he is. Okay, so he's here. Just testing to make sure he's here. So the objectives are to introduce a model and use it to investigate the flock equilibria, but particularly we're interested in representing, looking at some things having to do with the dynamics of flocks. I think I was originally motivated by a movie that I saw at a talk this summer by Ian Cousin, and it showed these pictures of the bird flocks flying around, and they were, it was very dynamic. There were like waves going through it, and the flock was sort of waving around. And in another movie, there was fish responding in wave-like motion to the motion of a predator through the flock. So those are the types of things that we were particularly interested in. And we're going to, I guess this is sort of a common, it's coming up all the time. So the characteristics of common microscopic models of flocks are nearby repulsion to avoid collisions, large-scale attraction so that a flock is formed, local relaxation of velocity orientations to a common direction, and some sort of speed regulation at a common speed. And as it said in the title, we're going to use a continuum model in which the basic variables are going to be the density of the, and I'll use this Craig Reynolds terminology for agents, I'll call them voids, since I'm from New York, and the macroscopic velocity, which is a locally averaged void velocity field. And here is the equation, the model that we're going to be using without trying to justify it too much. So the first one is, first equation is sort of obvious. It just says that the number of voids is conserved. They don't spontaneously appear or disappear. The next equation is an equation for the evolution of the velocity. This is the derivative of the velocity in a frame moving with the local void velocity. And then there are these four terms which represent the four tendencies that I mentioned on the previous slide. This term, which looks like pressure in a fluid, is used to model the nearby local repulsion that the voids feel for each other so that they don't collide. This other term is sort of acting on a longer length scale, and it's attractive to make the flock. This is the velocity orientation term, and this is the speed regulating term. So just go through those four terms labeled 1, 2, 3, 4 again in four slides. So this pressure, we choose for this pressure a form like this. And this is sort of a familiar thing to physicists. This would be like what you would have if you had a gas of particles, but you can't squeeze, if you're thinking of these as rigid particles, you can't squeeze this gas past a certain density because all the particles will then be in contact with each other, and there's an excluded volume so that the density can never get above a particular value. And that's what this denominator term is. So when rho approaches this rho star is the maximum density that you could possibly have, the pressure becomes infinite. So you can't compress it past rho star. And that's what the voids like to do. They don't want to have too large a density so that they actually start banging into each other. So that's what we use for the repulsion term.
So in the denominator, in locally in it's possible for a row, star to exceed one? It's not?
No, because
the sign is always positive?
Right, we'll consider, it could, you know, if this is less than that, it could never become bigger than that, because as you start to compress it, just think of compressing a gas, the pressure gets bigger and bigger, and no matter, and if the pressure approaches infinity, then even when you're pushing on it with an infinite force, it still doesn't go anywhere. So then the next term is something, this is this repulsive term, and you've seen this general form before. Here we're going to use for this U a form which we find convenient. So in three dimensions, if I look at two point voids, their interaction, their attraction is given by this, and it has two components. One is it falls off like 1 over R, so if they get far away, they don't see each other as well. And then the other thing is there's an exponential screening length, which might, so if there's some fog or something, that will cut down their field of view. Another way of arriving at exactly this form is to say that you have particles that are emitting a smell or a chemical that whose density then attracts the other particles by a gradient, and this stuff diffuses out and it evaporates or it falls apart. And if that process is faster than the configuration changes, you get exactly this form. The nice thing about this is that this particular form satisfies this equation, which means that the potential satisfies that equation. So it's a del squared minus this screening term, and then the void density is on the other side. This is the form of the potential in three dimensions, but this equation we take to apply in any number of dimensions. Okay, so and then the velocity regulating term, not the orientation term, is the guy at X looks at the guy at X prime and sees that there's some difference, and then he tries to go to that guy, and he weights the effect of that guy by the density, by the number of guys that are at X prime, plus some other screening thing. So we use the same type of screening as before, the same form of the screening, except we use a different screening length for the velocity. And then there's the speed regulation term, which has this coefficient 1 over tau. This is just like what Bruno was talking about. And if you imagine, for example, that tau gets small, then the speed will be clamped to V0, but the orientation could still be anything.
In that particular term, you have 1 minus V squared. The exponent rule has some particular significance?
No. I could put some other exponent. Because I don't really know what it is. So. It's just something it's just something to do what it says over here. If the speed is too low compared to V0, it increases it, and if it's too high, it decreases it. That's all. So it could be some other exponent or some other function. Okay, so the first thing we're going to do, because we want to look at dynamics, is we're going to get an equilibrium. And we're going to consider the case of a one-dimensional flock. So the density is just a function of the some variable x, since we'll scale a variable x, and we'll take the velocity to be constant at v0, and that makes the speed orientation in regulating terms both zero, and since we're doing this in the frame moving with the flock, the ddt term is also zero. So we just have to balance this repulsive term with the attractive term. And the attractive term satisfies this equation. And the nice thing about this is that these are just differential equations. And well, this one is very easy to integrate once. So that gives p as a function of u. Then you could put that in here. P is, well, rho, it gives rho as a function. Yeah. So you could just put, it gives u as a function of rho, and you could just put that in here, and that gives a second order nonlinear differential equation for rho. And you can integrate that once in a very standard way by multiplying by both sides of that equation by d rho dx, and obtaining an equation of this form, which can again be integrated by saying that dx equals d rho over the square root of this times square root of 2, and integrate that and get equilibria. So these equilibria will depend on two things. One will be this dimensionless constant. This kappa rho is the inverse screening length. The T is the sort of like the temperature that's the coefficient of the pressure in front of the pressure term. The rho star is the maximum density that you could get, and the u zero is the overall strength coefficient multiplying the attraction. So that's one parameter. The other parameter is how many voids there are in the flock. And so here are three solutions with different numbers of voids. And this axis is rho over rho star. This axis is x divided by the screening length. And rho zero over here is the maximum density. And similar to what's been seen before, as the maximum density gets closer and closer to rho star, the center of the flock becomes flatter and flatter. Okay, so that's an equilibrium. Whoops, I did the wrong thing. Pushed the wrong button. To look at the dynamics.
Oh, you have to go to the lower left to get it to start where you're.
Yeah, but I'm stupid. Okay. So when I started off, I was motivating this by saying that we were interested in waves and dynamic process. We're also interested in stability. Is that equilibrium that we just found, is it a stable equilibrium? And this was the equilibrium. It was some, I guess there's no, well, I guess now I'm using zero for a different reason than before. Here I'm using zero to be the equilibrium, and then there's a perturbation on top of that. So we had this equilibria is rho as a function of x, and now we want to add perturbations and see what kind of waves there are, and in particular we'd also like to know whether these equilibria are stable to perturbations. If they're not, then the equilibria would never form. This shows the one could manipulate these equations into a single, well, it's a vector equation of this form, where this quantity zeta is the perturbed void flux, and then these other things have these different definitions. In this H, and also in the W, here I wrote W, this is H hat and W hat. This W hat is what happens when you put that exponential e to the s, whatever, into the orientation term, and it's a long thing, and I didn't put it down, and I don't think you care right now. And the H is, has two parts. One is due to the pressure, the compressibility. So this is the thing that's keeping them from colliding. And the other is due, this other part is due to the longer range attraction. And this symbol over here, where I've written this differential operator to the minus one, is shorthand for this thing. Okay, so those are the equations. What can you do with them? Well, they're for one thing, we can try to do something purely analytically, and that's what I'll describe next, but we could also solve them numerically, and I'll also mention that. So the analytical thing that we can do is we could say, let's say we have this one-dimensional flock where the voids are mostly located in the slab, and then we look at a perturbation along the slab, which is like, you know, sort of snaking like that. And if this wavelength is long compared to the thickness of the slab, we can do an asymptotic analysis and get an analytical solution, which I'll just state on the next slide. So we introduce this small parameter, which is basically the longness of this wavelength, and expand the equations, and we get a zero order solution. Then we take the inner product of the equation for the full zeta with the zero order solution. That annihilates higher order terms to give an equation for s. Remember, we were assuming things going like e to the st. So an oscillation would be imaginary s, and growth would mean that s had a positive real part. That would be instability. And similarly, damping would be s had a negative real part. And so we get this equation for the particular equilibrium that I chose. This c is actually, when we use the right ordering, this c is actually higher order, but I included it anyway because you might want to look at other laws for the velocity orientation term. But for what we looked at, this term was actually absent and in this ordering, and therefore everything was purely oscillatory. And you can see over here that this is B is positive and A is positive. So if I looked at some other W and it came out to be, C came out to be positive, that would represent instability. And if C turned out to be negative, that would give you a long wavelength damped mode. So we've also done a similar analysis for a cylindrical flock with a long wavelength perturbation along the axis of the cylinder, and a similar result can be obtained. And this long wavelength analysis isn't terribly interesting in practice. It's most interesting as sort of a check on numerical work. And one could just do a straightforward discretization of these equations with and obtain a large eigenvalue problem for S and solve that numerically. And for the particular parameters that we look at in the model, all the eigenmodes are stable. So the equilibrium that we looked at was stable. And for k, for small k, the damping rate was very much less than the real frequency, which agreed with what I was saying before. Small k means that the wavelength is long compared to the layer width. And as you make k higher, letting the wavelength approach the layer width, the real frequency becomes bigger.
Do you have that?
Well, I guess I have something wrong here. Yeah, maybe smaller. At any rate, this says that you don't have a lot of very tiny waves in this flock. The flock, if there are waves propagating in the flock, they're somehow excited by maybe flying over terrain or some other disturbance, that they should, they'll be probably fairly long wavelength, and then they die out or possibly propagate to the edge of the flock. The last thing very briefly that I wanted to discuss was a flock obstacle avoidance, and this was discussed in on Monday night in Nick's poster. So we're going to consider a very large flock moving with a constant velocity in the positive x direction, and there'll be an obstacle that the boids don't like. So they'll fly away from this obstacle, or swim away from it, or whatever they do. And I'm considering that the width of this obstacle is very much smaller than the size of the flock. So locally, in some fairly large region around this obstacle, where I say large, I mean large compared to the size of the obstacle, but small compared to the size of the flock. In that region, I could consider the density of the voids to be uniform. And this obstacle is represented in the equations by just saying that there's a repulsive potential of this form. So it's a Gaussian hill that's repelling these voids. And then we simply take our equations, we add this repulsive potential, we linearize the equations, and because we're doing this in the frame of the obstacle, we could just look at the at the time-independent response to this obstacle. And then what we did was we actually just, by the way, this obstacle was two-dimensional, not three-dimensional. Then we took Fourier transforms in X and Y and horsed around a bit, and then changed it to polar coordinates centered at the center of the obstacle. And the result was that the perturbation in the void density from uniform was given by some form, something of this form, and I won't write down what this ugly thing is. And right. That's a good reason not to. And I'll just show this. This is one result of doing that. So here is the obstacle. The center of the obstacle is over here. The voids are flying in this direction, and they come to the obstacle, and they sort of launch this cone, Mach cone, like a. A bow wave, or a shock wave, whatever, And over here, they, you know, then they're trying to fly around this, and then they influence each other, and as a result, the density of the Boyds is high over here, and then it's low over there, and we get this type of picture.
So you made a leap from one to two dimensions right away when you started talking about that barrier. Before that, it was all one-dimensional analysis.
Well, the instability was also, the equilibrium was one-dimensional. So the talk had several parts. The equilibrium was one-dimensional, and then I was looking at the stability, waves and stability. And that was, well, yeah, that was basically three-dimensional because I had kx and ky, but
okay.
It's sort of two-dimensional. Right. And then this is, then here I'm putting myself in the frame of the obstacle, the Boyds are flying by, and the obstacle is, you can think of the obstacle as being like a flagpole, or some pole sticking out of the ground, and the Boyds are flying around that. Okay, well, this is, basically as much as I wanted to say in this talk, and so I just wanted to conclude by saying I think this is an interesting model to investigate these kinds of phenomena. We haven't been working on it that long, and we have a lot more to do. Certainly, in the future we would want to do more work on our numerical stability. We'd want to look at the stability of cylinders or spheres. We'd want to look at milling solutions and using these equations as well. But I think that those are just lots of work for Nick. So thanks very much.